Now, there's a magical part of Birmingham that a lot of people don't know about. There's lots of magical parts of Birmingham and the Black Country, but this is one that I want to bring to your attention today. It's in Arbon. It's the Morpall Estate. It's a historic estate. It's, we're going to be talking with Hilary about growing up there and living there. But Rob Sutton is with us now from the Residents Association. Rob, Morpall, I've been through there. It's a wonderful estate, but you wouldn't know it unless you know where it is, would you?
Well, morning, Carl.
Morning to you.
It's a lot of people don't know about Morpall. It's a garden suburb. It's tucked away on the side of Harbourne. It's been there since 1907. It was built by John Sutton Nettlefold, but it is a little bit of forgotten part, a hidden gem, as we call it.
Now, you mentioned the Garden City movement. Birmingham was at the forefront of that with George Cadbury and Bourneville. But the Garden City movement has roots going back to Titus Salter, and Edward Ackroyd, and in West Yorkshire. There's Welling Garden City, Port Sunlight. But Harbin's one of those places, the Morpall Estate, that is never mentioned.
It's a sad fact, yes, it is never mentioned. Everybody knows about Bourneville, and Bourneville's a lovely garden suburb as well, but Morpall is a little bit forgotten. And I suppose, unfortunately, we don't have a chocolate factory, which is to our disadvantage, but it is a wonderful place. It's a complete little community.
Describe it for people that don't know it.
Well, it's about 500 houses in total, but the magical thing about it is it's got a lot of community facilities with it. We've got our own hall at the very centre. We've got our own bowling green. We've got tennis courts. We've got a skittle alley.
Yeah, this is fact. I mean, Steve Beauchamp wrote to me about this.
Played in Birmingham. He's written the book. He's had the unique skittle alley in there, the only one of its kind in the country now. And these aren't modern things that have just been put there recently. These go back right to the early days of the estate, and they were put there for the benefit of the tenants, the community.
Now, you mentioned, and I agree with you, it's a garden city idea. So does that mean that, as we normally would associate with garden towns, garden cities, there's plenty of greenery?
Well, there's lots of greenery. The roads were built slightly narrower than normal, and that allowed for having green verges along the side. Nettlefold incorporated open spaces. He incorporated allotments. There's about 12 different lots of allotments. You can't see any of the allotments from the road, yeah, but there's lots of small allotments. You could go out your back gate. Everybody had the opportunity of going onto an allotment and growing their own food. We've gone full circle. People are talking about having allotments now and have provision. But Nettlefold, he was there 100 years ago.
Now, of course, he was one of the family of Nettlefold and Chamberlain, which became GKN, eventually Geskeen and Nettlefold. A very wealthy manufacturing family with their headquarters on Broad Street, although the factory was in Smerwick. He was chairman of Birmingham's housing department, wasn't he?
That's right.
Housing committee.
I suspect his, although he probably had substantial wealth, and he lived in a very nice house, Winterbourne. Yeah. Botanic Gardens.
Which has just been done up by the university. Fabulous.
And they've got Nettlefold's desk and things like that there to go and look at. But I think his heart seemed to be actually in town planning.
Yeah.
He put a lot of work into that. He wrote several books on the subject, quite detailed books on the subject. So he was very keen, and he wanted to, I think, show how Birmingham could expand, go away from the back-to-backs, provide healthy living for people. It wasn't built like Bourneville, say, for the factory. It was built to show how people could live in a great community.
And as you say, 1907, when you brought some photographs of the stone laying ceremonies of the first houses. And
absolutely.
It's a very much a rural setting then. Harbin Village was there, but the rest was countryside.
Well, completely, yes. We were on the edge. We were on the edge of Harbourne. The field stretched away beyond the estate then. The city's changed tremendously.
But what a contrast, as you mentioned, between the back-to-backs of Ladywood and of Sparkbrook and Borsall Heath and Small Heath and Neatchells and Aston, Duddiston, etc. Massive, with so many families crowded into little backyards, and to come to a place like Morpall with all this space and greenery.
Well, I think Hilary will tell you, as a long-standing resident, what it was like to live here, because she has, she knows it as a child, and many of the families that moved onto the estate stayed on the estate throughout their life. The children would buy houses there. It was a wonderful place to live. It must have been absolutely fantastic.
You're obviously a convert, so tell us about how you became involved.
Well, really, I got involved with it when, unfortunately, some of the open spaces were under threat from planning and development. So I got involved with the Residents Association at that point. And in one respect, the planning applications made everybody who lived on Walpole understand far better what it was we had.
So it's a bit of a wake-up call.
A bit of a wake-up call. We took it for granted up till then. But now we understand the history of the estate. Certainly I, as a newbie, having lived there 30 years, probably Hillary already understood what Walpole was about.
We'll come to Hillary then straight after the travel and find out about growing up on the estate, and then come back to Rob and find out what's going to happen now, and particularly how the estate will develop in the future. We're talking about the Walpole estate in Harburn. Rob Sutton, a resident there, long-standing resident for 30 years, has been explaining a little bit about the history, how it was set up by one of the pioneers of the town planning movement, John Sutton Nettlefold, a councillor in Birmingham, a leading industrialist, and it was a part of the Garden City movement, and how there was fears for some of the open areas, wasn't there, Rob? And that's why you all started to find out more about the estate's
Absolutely. We had planning applications being put in to build on things like allotments, so we got our act together and we fought that tooth and nail. But it was really, we learnt about the estate and we then started to get to know each other a lot better. More people got involved. People like Hillary, who's here with me today, were able to tell us more about the past history.
When did your... Thank you, Rob. When Hillary, welcome to the show. When did your family move to the estate?
I was born on the estate. Mum and Dad had a house there when they got married.
Yeah.
And Mum had lived there herself from about the age of 8, I think it was.
Really?
My grandfather had worked first of all in the Eland Valley, where they were building the Eland Valley.
Yes.
And then they moved back to Birmingham, and then as soon as our estate was got together, road by road, they were one of the first families to move into the estate. And I was born there in the same road. We've lived in two houses in that road, Margaret Grove. And when I got married, we were lucky enough to get a house in Walpole Avenue.
Brilliant.
And now I live in Ravenhurst Road for the last 40 years.
Now, you said about your granddad. Was he a Birmingham man?
He was from Sheffield. Not from Sheffield, but he was from Yorkshire. Lived in Sheffield for a while. I've never really known why he didn't go back to Yorkshire, but he worked in various places. He worked on the building of some of the docks in Southampton.
Yeah.
Then went to the Eland Valley. Then he came back to South Staffs Water.
Right.
And worked for the rest of his working life in Birmingham.
Yeah.
And brought his family up on the estate, on Walpole Estate.
Did your mum used to talk to you about what the estate was like when she was a kid?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, I can. One of the things I can remember is her saying that one of her friends, I say friends,
yes,
pushing a bunch of stinging nettles into her face when she was quite tiny. Yeah. So that didn't go down very well with her. But they had a life like I had.
Yeah.
Freedom.
Yeah.
You could go out of your back gate and no one saw you for the rest of the morning. You could hear your mum calling in the distance and you'd go back for a bit of lunch, out again in the afternoon. We had wonderful dens, my friend and I, the bottom of the road, into the bushes at the bottom of Walpole Avenue.
Because there's all little copses and bits of woodland as well,
yes,
isn't there?
There are lots of little roads. In fact, there is one that I only went in last week,
for the first time
in my life, to the old orchard. I'd heard people talking about the old orchard. I'd never seen it. And the gentleman took me up there and showed me.
Amazing.
It's fascinating. Lots of small places. Wonderful for children, absolutely wonderful.
And the kind of place, though, that if you didn't have to go there, you wouldn't go there at all, because it wasn't a cut through to anywhere, it hadn't got a shopping centre.
No, just a little row of shops, news agents, post office, which unfortunately we've now lost, and that was it. The rest of the time you went up the hill to the high street, which used to finish a lot of the elderly ladies who couldn't manage the...
And because you're lower down, aren't you, where
you are? Yes, yes. It's right down. The Walpole Pond is at the bottom of it.
Yes.
There's an overflow from the Walpole Pond that goes down a culvert. It goes right through under the allotments and out, and it joins the Chad Brook, as we called it, but I believe it's the Chad River, actually, about 2 feet
We'll
wide.
Still call it Chad Brook, won't we?
Yes.
I mean, so Chad Valley was, weren't it?
It's the toy makers, yes, Chad Valley. And that was another of our places to play when we were children, doing bunny jumps down the culvert under the road.
Yeah.
And where it opened out, we used to sit And I should imagine it was partially sewerage. I've no idea, but we didn't care. We sat there talking.
Well, you know what they used to say when we was kids? You'll eat a peck of dirt before you die.
You do.
Hey, we're still here, aren't we, mate?
That's it.
It sounds like it was an idyllic childhood.
To me, it was. That's the very word I always use, idyllic. I feel sorry for children these days. They seem to be behind computers and electronic
gadgets.
Well,
we're scared to let kids out now, aren't we? You know, because of strangers. We're scared of cars and, you know, everything's become more enclosed for youngsters today, hasn't it?
It was perfect. To me, it seemed as if it was perfect.
And it's obvious this is your world. You never wanted to leave it.
No, I didn't. No, I didn't. When we got married, we could have bought a house, I suppose, but I wanted to live there. My husband's very good-natured. Let me have my own way.
Yeah. Well, listen, us blokes soon learn that, don't we? If we want an easy life, don't we, Rob? We just say yes, love, whatever you want, love. Hilary, was it rented accommodation originally?
Yes. There was the possibility to buy, but most people, as far as I was concerned, lived in rented. Certainly my friends did. We all lived in rented accommodation.
And who, was it the estate itself? Was it a residents association then, or was it a company that rented it?
We were run by a committee of directors.
Yes.
And they were paid a very small sum of money
to
do this. And it was a voluntary thing, really. And they ran it very well. To me, we had a wonderful way of going about things. You wanted a house, you were preferentially treated if you had grandparents or parents on the estate. That was fine. And you could also, when you were older, when I had a son and I had a daughter, knew that I needed another bedroom, you could put your name down on a list for an exchange. And perfect way of... People didn't have to move.
So somebody's kids had moved on.
That's right.
And then have got three bedrooms and don't need the three bedrooms, could move down to a two-bedroom and vice versa.
Perfect situation, I always felt that was.
Yeah. And I presume there were quite stringent rules and regulations about how you had to maintain the property and the gardens.
Every month, the directors would have a meeting, and every so often, certain of the directors would move around different parts of the estate, have a look at your garden, had you mowed your lawn, had you cut your hedges, and they told you if they didn't think it was up to scratch, because my auntie got told and had to have her, she got my cousin to do her front garden so that she could look after it in a better way. They did look after us and they did keep everything...
Spick and span.
If you wanted an exchange, one of the directors came to your house and looked at what it was like. And believe you me, Carl, I've never done so much housework in my life as when I wanted an exchange.
Out of something that could have been bad for the estate, perhaps overdevelopment and got you all worried, something good has really emerged, which have all come, as Rob said, closer together.
I think the community's coming back because of all Rob's work and the rest of the committee, which we think is wonderful. They work so hard. I don't know how they managed to find the time to do everything. And it's great.
Are you more hopeful of the future now?
Oh, I am, yes.
Because there was an air of despondency a few years ago, wasn't there?
Yes, definitely.
That's good news. Yes. Thank you for joining us, Hilary.
We think it's wonderful. Thank you, Hilary.
Rob, so we all understand there's the need for development and the need for building houses. What was your argument that why more poor should have been treated?
Well, we saw it as still being an example of community living, and the fact that there were open spaces, the allotments, that those should really be preserved as a demonstration. They were there for a very good reason when the estate was built, and we felt it was most important they should be kept for that very early reason. People should have somewhere to go.
How did you manage to succeed?
Well, unfortunately, we didn't succeed. The decision was made to allow the planning applications through. We are now having to live with that and cope with that. We are trying to get together to buy the remaining community facilities, which are owned by a private company at the moment, and to put those back into the ownership of the estate itself.
So communal ownership.
Communal ownership, yes. We're going to start a Morpool Heritage Trust.
Brilliant.
We've put in a big Heritage Lottery Fund application to buy the hall. We want to get the allotments back into our own control and ownership. And we're going through a major fundraising programme.
And I suppose one of the things you need to do now is to work positively with the developers.
Yes, we're doing that. And when the sites are finally sold, which is going to happen this week, and the new owners come in, we want to talk to them. We want to discuss with them how we can take over ownership of the allotments, for example. and to secure those for the future. They're a great asset to the estate. Yeah. There's so much demand for them. It's most important they're not lost in the future.
Are you hopeful for the future?
I think there's a great opportunity now. There is really probably a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to take back ownership and to move forward again. We're working closely with the current owner to do that. We've been working closely with the City Council. We're getting great support from our local councillors. They've helped us.
Well, our councillor, John Alden, he's very keen on...
Yeah, they've given us assistance on setting up the trust. They've given us assistance in looking at how to manage the community facilities if we take them on. Because we're just residents at the end of the day.
You've got to learn new skills, haven't you?
New skills, absolutely.
Yes.
You know.
We've got to take it on. We've got to find out how to cope with these problems.
But I think what's encouraging is that you're not just standing there saying, oh, this shouldn't have happened. It's happening.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. Let's work positively together now for the good of the wider community.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we'll move forward. We're still here. We're still fighting. And we hope we'll have a new Moorpool at the end of it.
And if people want to find out more, is there a website they can go on to, Rob?
Absolutely. You can go on to www.moorpool.com. That's the main website. Or you can go on to our fundraising website, which is moorpoolfundraising.co.uk. There's lots of information about the history of the estate.
Great.
You can look at the old books and documents, pictures of our events and all the things that have gone on. So there's lots to look at.
And anything coming up in the next few weeks that you'd like people to come to?
Well, we're setting up a whole fundraising strategy. We had a great party last weekend, Pims by the Pool, which went down an absolute storm. Well, there was literally a storm because it poured with rain later on in the afternoon. We've got quiz nights, all the sort of things, balloon races. We'll be having a dance in September. Lots of things to do. If people want to look on the website, they can keep in touch with us.
Thank you for joining me, Rob.
Thank you for having us on
the program. Thank you, Hilary, for joining me, and good luck with what you're doing on the estate.
Thank you.